In 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Becoming Preferred podcast. Today, we're diving deep into a narrative that's both heart-wrenching and incredibly inspiring. Our guest, Caleb Dahlgren, a name that resonates with resilience, hope, and the power of the human spirit to overcome the unimaginable. Caleb, a survivor of the tragic 2018 Humboldt Broncos bus crash, has turned a story of profound loss into one of purpose and impact. Beyond surviving, he's thriving. As a student, an advocate for diabetes and mental health, and a best-selling author, his journey is a testament to the strength found in vulnerability and the importance of sharing our stories to connect, heal, and inspire. This episode is about the power of the human spirit, the importance of community, and the unstoppable force of a determined heart. Join me now for my conversation with Caleb Dahlgren. Well, hi, Caleb. Welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on here. I appreciate it.
I was excited about this interview. I've had a chance to go through your book. We got an advanced copy of it, so we went through everything. And man, what a story. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we'll introduce you to our listeners. But to get started, because I think your story is just amazing. And with your book, Crossroads, we've got a lot of top celebrities, whether it's Wayne Gretzky or Wickenheiser or any of them, have lots of accolades about your book. So it was a big success. You're a best-selling author and speaker, and you're currently in school to become a chiropractor. So I think this is your last year, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Going to my last year coming up here, starting in May. Super excited for it.
That's exciting. Well, we'll get into it. But hey, let's give people a little context, those who might remember. But let's start off earlier, because I think when you were 4 years of age, you've had to handle adversity and challenges most of your life. Age 4, you got diagnosed with child onset diabetes, I believe, type 1?
Yep, you bet. So at age 4, I got diagnosed type 1 diabetes. And that was like the first kind of crossroad, as you'd want to call it, in my life, where I was challenged to find resilience and to bounce back from it. And it wasn't an easy time whatsoever.
What happened? So, okay, you're 4 years old. What were the symptoms? Did mom notice some things or?
It's super interesting. So I was at my babysitter's that day and I was actually planning on flying to San Jose in my brain, my magical little brain, to play my dad in the basement downstairs hockey. And I was at Calgary Flames and we're flying to play against San Jose Sharks. And so I was at my babysitter's anyways, and I was super thirsty and I kept drinking more fluids and more fluids and more fluids. And I loved milk. So I kept asking for milk. And so by the time lunch rolled around, I had took a huge jug, a 4-liter jug of milk, and demolished it. And so my babysitter at the time was like, there's something wrong with Caleb. He's a 4-year-old. He should not be drinking this much fluids. And like, he's going to the bathroom steadily. Like, he's drinking and going to the bathroom, drinking, bathroom. She says something's up. She called my dad, and my dad and mom are both nurses by trade. So they came and picked me up. My dad picked me up, took me home. I was like, you know what? You should go sit down on the toilet. I think there's a little bit more inside of you that you need to let out, kind of thing. So I went and sat down, and then a couple minutes later, washing hands, and I was tap and kept. Bar kept running. A couple minutes went by, he came in, and there I was, my head underneath the tap, lapping water in my mouth, the toothbrush. It was like, what is going on? So anyways, took me to the hospital, rushed me in, went right through eMERGE. And once I got into the hospital, then I got poked and prodded with needles. And within a couple hours, the doctor called in my parents and said that Caleb is a type 1 diabetic and will be insulin dependent for the rest of his life.
Wow. So your pancreas was just shot.
Yeah. It usually happens after a autoimmune. It's usually
an event.
And then something happens to it and then it becomes an autoimmune disorder. And so for me, that was what happened. I was sick previous to it. I had the flu and was just recovering from the flu. And then that was when I got the symptoms for type 1 diabetes. So that is usually the common thread as a young child.
Were you on a pump or did you have to do the injection?
So I did injections at the very start and didn't move to a pump until I was 23. It's been only 3 years now that I've been on a pump. But for me, the big piece behind it was I felt good on injections and I knew that I was for sure getting the insulin that I needed in my body, where the pump wasn't too comfortable. But looking back at it now in retrospect, which I went on the pump a little bit earlier. Sure. But at the time, like you said, there were some challenges. There were some teams that would cut me because I was a type 1 diabetic. Coaches would second guess me, being like, is he too much of a distraction? If I'm sitting on the bench and I can't go for the shift, that's a liability to the team. and even trying to explain it to my teammates and even at school too, going to class and being the only one with a cell phone in kindergarten and grade one. And at the time, those cell phones were bricks. They were bricks. And so I'm walking into class with this heavy phone in my bag and students like, oh, can I use them? Like, no, unless you have type 1 diabetes, which none of you got. So yeah, there was some different challenges and even having snacks in the middle of class. Why does he get a snack? I don't get a snack. Just things that shouldn't even be happening, or people see me give myself needles and thinking that I'm sick or I'm on drugs or that kind of thing, which doesn't really ring true and isn't that good of a mindset to have or have people ask you about that.
Yeah. Well, and when you're 4 years old, you're going through that, what do you know, right? Because you grow up knowing that. And then when you become a teenager and parties and things, because I mean, we're going to go out, you want to have a drink or a beer with everybody else, and even alcohol can upset the apple cart. You have to balance yourself a little bit. So it absolutely caused you to start focusing on things. So you realize you were a little unique and a little different, even at that age, right?
Very unique and different. The beauty of the illness was the fact that it made me develop a lot of resiliency, develop strength, self-awareness, body awareness, and even accountability. Because if I'm not accountable to my blood glucose levels, then I'm not going to be healthy and able to perform my best. And on top of that, it was avocation, education, awareness. Being able to support other people with it too. So there's tons of different things that it brought on and lots of positive things in my mind.
Awesome. Well, let's move on. And the sport we're talking about is hockey. Obviously, you were athletically oriented. You grew up in Saskatchewan and then started playing hockey probably around the same time, or skating around 4 or 5 years of age. That's the thing Canadians do, right? We do that sometimes before we walk. And you started playing hockey. So you had a junior career. So what was your position?
I was the right wing and center. Those are like my two, but I actually played every position in AAA summer hockey, which is hilarious. So I played goalie, D, and forward on all positions.
Okay. You must have been quick. So you must have been really quick. That's good. So let's go fast forward now. And this is probably what you're probably most known for, and from your book, Crossroads. We're not going to spend too much time on this, but give our listeners an overview of what happened.
Yeah. So I was involved in a collision that our bus, so there's a group of us on the bus heading to Nipawin to play the Hawks in Saskatchewan New York League playoffs. Our bus collided T-bone into a semi-truck trailer who blew through a stop sign. So we had the right of way. The semi-truck trailer went through a stop sign and we hit the trailer on the semi-truck, not the semi-truck. And we lost 16 people who I considered to be family. And I was one of the 13 survivors from that day.
Wow. Where were you on the bus? Were you in the middle somewhere or towards the back?
I was towards the back. I was 12th row in on aisle seat and I was fourth from the back. And I was on the driver's side of the bus.
Wow. Did you see it coming or was everybody asleep, basically relaxed? Because I believe it was at nighttime.
Honestly, it wasn't nighttime. It was during the day. It was on our way to the game. So it was around 4 o'clock. Yeah. And I was awake and I was actually listening to music. And at the time, I had my headphones in and I had my eyes closed because I was visualizing who were playing against that night and doing some prep before the game. And didn't hear anything, didn't see anything. We went bang and everything went black. And then I woke up in a hospital 5 days later, confused and wondering what just happened. And I saw white and realized I was in a hospital. And then after that, I kind of came to my senses. My parents told me I was in a crash and that their bus that crashed and that I had been there for 5 days. And for me, I had no clue. And in those 5 days, I guess on the scene, I was walking around helping my teammates. I have no recollection of this whatsoever. After that, I was transported into an ambulance to Nipawin Hospital. Then I got air ambulance flown from Nipawin to Saskatoon and remained in Saskatoon. And I was in a state called post-traumatic amnesia, where I was alert talking to people, but I just don't remember it. I have zero recollection of it.
It's kind of a blessing in one sense too, isn't it?
It is a blessing in one sense, but in another sense too, it would be nice to kind of remember everything that happened.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if I don't, then that's okay. I've had lots of doctors tell me that one day I could wake up and remember everything that happened. One day I might have a dream that's very vivid and has all the details of everything. But as of right now, I'm still blank from those 5 days.
Yeah. So how long were you in the hospital for altogether?
So I was in the hospital. Oh, this is a good question. I want to say it was 21 days. I was in the hospital for 21 days, I believe. So I was in the Saskatoon Royal University Hospital, and I got transit Saskatoon City Hospital. And it was around 10 days each that I was in both hospitals. And I really wanted to transition quickly to City Hospital, just so the fact that I could start my rehab process a little bit more and integrate different areas of myself into the community. But I did like my time in the Royal University Hospital. We had our own little room with all the survivors. There's a couple of us in the same room. Based on our conditions, we're kind of all in the same area. So that was really nice. And it was good to have that sense of community after losing 16 people we consider to be family.
Yeah, no kidding. And a lot of them were killed instantly when the collision occurred. So they hopefully didn't have to suffer. Now, were your helmet mostly head trauma, or you also had some physical stuff too?
Yeah, so I suffered quite a few injuries. I had a fractured skull and a puncture wound to my skull. A skull degloving, so the whole right side of my head was completely ripped off, as you look like, or scraped. And then I had 5 broken vertebrae in my neck, 4 broken vertebrae in my back. I had blood clots in my left arm and my right eardrum, and muscle, nerve, and ligament damage to my neck and my back. And then on top of that, too, I had a severe traumatic brain injury, which I still have today, where I shouldn't be able to remember my name, how to write, or how to talk. So I was very fortunate to come out the way I came out today.
Oh, that's good. And again, it's overcoming that resiliency. So 2021, you published your book. The book came out through HarperCollins, which became a bestseller. You've got a lot of good testimonials, and it's a great book. And it's not just a story about that crossroad. It's a story of just crossroads in general. There's lots of different things that have occurred for you. And so it highlights, it's a memoir of your life up to that point, and you're still a young man. What led you down the road to say, hey, I'm going to do a book? Were there other books that were written from your teammates, or were you the only one to launch one?
I was the first one to launch one from the team. There are some potentially in the works. But for me, the big thing about it was I didn't want to write a book. If you would have asked me, I didn't want to write a book. And comfortable, it's out of my wheelhouse. It's completely out of my comfort zone. And it took me a long time before I actually decided, you know what, I'm going to do this. And it all stemmed. I asked lots of people. I actually talked to Haley Wickenheiser at the time that I was offered. And I asked her, I was like, what do you think about this? She's like, it'll be a great opportunity to share your story and to help other people. And I said, yeah, I could do that through speaking, though. And I could do that through other things. It doesn't need to be a book. So yeah, but it's just another outlet. And it's another way to express yourself. It could also be cathartic. And I was like, nah, no, I'm not doing it. So I was sitting in class one day, and this was in November of 2019. And my teacher walks in the room and usually has like a quote or a statistic or something super motivational and something controversial. Like he'll do something to grab the class. So that day you walked in the classroom and I'm sitting front and center. I always sit front and center in my school. No ashamed to be a nerd in the front row, and walked in and he said, when you want to change the world, it starts with you. Simple as that. And I sat there and I was like, well, I was speaking. I had my Dahlgren's diabetes. I was doing tons of things within the York community at the time, tons of things in the diabetic community. I was sharing my story to people around North America to help them through their tough times. And I was like, you know what? I do want to help people. And it does start with me. And I do want to change the world. And so that's where the inspiration came from, is my professor, Dr. Purchill. And I looked to my roommate and I said, I'm going to write a book. He's like, what? And I looked to my teammate from Saskatoon. And I'm like, I'm going to write a book. He's like, Dolly, you don't even read. What do you mean you're going to write a book? I was like, that's it. I'm writing a book that people that don't like to read will actually read it. And it'll show them insights, but it also will donate all the proceeds back to charity and help other people through my story. And that's it.
Well, and you talk about the power of writing, because by writing your memoir, it was a process of your experiences, obviously, but how did it help you in the healing process? And what did you hope that people would take away from the story?
For sure. So for me, there was a lot of healing I had before in the book. To even step into that role is a big thing to undertake, right? And reflecting on every single thing that's happening in your life. At the same time, it's a beautiful way to look and reflect on it and be like, wow, I've had so many people that have helped shape me to who I am today, like my grade 7 teacher. One of the things that she mentioned to me is what I talked about in the book, or even my mental performance coach that has 13 to 23. He helped me with framing my mindset, having a good positive outlook on life. There's a lot of different lessons that I learned throughout even writing it about myself and patterns that I've learned that I can either fix or improve on or strengthen. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to realizing that it was a big community that made me who I am today. That's the beauty of it, is who you surround yourself with and how you're able to be resilient is matter of who is around you at that time. You have people that uplift you, but you have people that bring you down. It's a lot harder and more challenging. So I was fortunate enough to have a lot of people by my side throughout those tough crossroads in my life and be able to uplift me.
You talk a lot about the value of community, and you do a lot of community work. So I can see where you get the inspiration for that. When it comes to building resilience, it's a theme that's central to your story for sure. For our listeners who are navigating maybe their own challenges, can you share some strategies or mindsets that have helped you maintain resilience in the face of that adversity?
Actually, before we even went to Humboldt, the first thing I had on my door when I walked out of the room was focus on the things that you can control. There's so many things in our life that are out of our control, such as other people's opinions, views, how other people treat us, certain situations like the weather. Lots of things are actually out of our control when we think about it. Right. We're able to focus on things that we can control, such as our attitude, our beliefs, our values, how we bring ourselves to the world, our work ethic, our energy, our smile, our manners. These are all things that we can control.
How we show up.
For me, yeah, exactly. And so for me, that was one of the big things is focus on things that you can control. Because I couldn't control the fact that a semi-truck driver went through the stop sign. I couldn't control the fact that our bus hit the truck trailer. I couldn't control the fact that person in front of me survived, beside me passed away, beside me passed away. I couldn't control any of that. All I could control is how I wanted to respond to that situation. How was I going to take this and make something good of it? Or was I let this defeat me for the rest of my life or for a certain point in my life? How was I going to respond to it? I control my parents, my friends. It was just how I was going to respond. Sure. Another big piece is to live with gratitude. Think about it. There's 7 billion people in this world, 8 billion. The fact that we're even talking right now is special. And I'm grateful for the fact of us being able to do that. The fact that I got to be on the bus with those 29 people and share a bond that no way can take away from me, that's special. And I guess one more big piece was just accepting and forgiveness. I think those two are really big pieces of tie-in. It's just accepting what had happened and forgiving. For me, that's always been something that I plan on doing my entire life and hopefully continue to as well. But I don't want to hold on to anything because what good does that do for me?
Yeah.
I find that for me, I don't heal. I don't fully get to the best place I can be. I limit myself and my dreams and my aspirations because I'm holding on to something that is not even tied to me. In a sense, and that is a figurative thing. And so for me, I wanted to accept what had happened and then forgive everyone involved. And for me, that's what feels the best.
Yeah, that must have been a challenge. I know there was a lot of mitigating factors. Speed was a factor. I know the driver, the rookie truck driver, was faulted. He was new driving. He wasn't under the influence from all accounts. Your bus might have been traveling at a faster speed as well. There's a lot of variables out there. And I mean, it's still unfortunate. He was sentenced, I believe, to 8 years consecutive terms and then was facing deportation. So he was a new landed immigrant. So you talked about forgiveness and acceptance. So have you forgiven the driver?
For sure. For sure. Not a problem at all. And I have. And the reason why I say yes is because I don't believe it was intended. And people make mistakes. And I'm faulty of making mistakes too. I have went through a stop sign before. It was late at night. Nobody was in an intersection. And yeah, I was on a dirt road. Didn't see a stop sign. Middle of the night. And thankfully, nobody was on the other side. There's not a car in sight. Good old Saskatchewan Rural Road. But people make mistakes. And I think forgiveness is so powerful when you understand that nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Nobody is perfect. And I feel bad. I truly do feel bad that he has to live the rest of his life knowing that he had affected 29 lives. But those lives that are connected to those 29 have to live with knowing that he killed 16 people. That's not easy. That's like, for me, that is not easy. And so I feel sorry. Feel bad that that's the situation.
Yeah, that's a life sentence. That's a life sentence, whether he likes it or not. Yeah, it's no, that's a great attitude.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company.
Now back to my conversation with Caleb Dahlgren. Throughout your life, you've obviously had that mindset, and that comes from leadership, comes from watching others as well. Has there been a significant mentor or leader that's inspired you? And if so, what was the most valuable lesson that they taught you or that you learned from them in overcoming challenges?
I feel like I've had many mentors and leaders in my life who had given me the opportunity to really showcase what leadership is on actions, on words, and living up to it, being consistent. One that I'd say comes particularly to me was Darcy Hogan, our head coach in Humboldt. He was really special just because I've never had a coach do this. So usually after hockey games, you have a coach come in and rip the team apart when you lose. When you lose, they come in and give it to you. Darcy never came in our dressing room after a loss because he wanted to make sure that everything he said was well thought and was logical and made sense, and that he didn't act out of spite or anger. And that was one of the biggest things for me that I took away that can not just apply to just sport, but life, business, anything, relationships, family. That's monumental. And you think back to like when times were tough, or like when things happen, or when fights occur or disagreements. And when people start to get angry and keep bullying, they say things that they don't even mean, or they say things that are completely out of context. And I found that that was one of the biggest things I took away from Darcy that was true leadership in my eyes.
Yeah, that's good. Good patience. And there's lots of aspects to leadership, but that's definitely a good example. You talk about community and the role of community, and your journey kind of underscores the importance of community support. You've talked a little bit about it. How has your community played a role in your recovery, your growth, and what advice do you have for others in building and leaning on their communities?
I feel like community is family for me. Community is truly family just because it doesn't need to be blood related. I have people in my life who I'm super close with that are not blood related, and I consider them to be brothers, parental figures. And it's beautiful because I'm able to choose them to be my family. They're able to choose me to be their family. And I found that after the crash, or even after difficult situations, even like looking back to when my dad was super ill and we didn't know if he's going to make it for another day, there was people in my life, but it was also me going to support others. I've done tons of community service. And when I was helping other people, in return, they were helping me. They're fulfilling my heart. They're making me feel. And one of the things was like after the crash, I ended up doing Dahlgren's Diabetes still. It was a program I started before the crash to help diabetic children as a mentorship program. And after, I continued it. Continued to be a national ambassador for GDRF, which is a diabetes research foundation. And I continued to coach. And those were all different communities that filled up my cup because I was able to help other people. And by helping other people, it in turn helped me. You always hear logic, you can't give to others with empty cups. But my cup was empty, but also by helping them, they were giving me more fuel into my cups too. There's a reciprocal thing into that.
No, and it's a good analogy. I call that the abundance cup. And you have this cup, and some people get a little bit of abundance or love or however you want to, you know, fill your cup. And they fill your cup up, and then they dam up their cup. They close it off. So there's nothing coming in. There's nothing going out. But when you empty that cup, maybe put away a little bit of abundance for another rainy day. And all of a sudden you empty the cup, you allow more to come back in again. The key is to keep it moving. And you make a good point with that. The key is to, if you want to have it in your life, you need to give that in your life in order to get it. Let's talk about mental health and the role of mental health, because obviously when you're going through, you know, from being a diabetic, you have to deal with the issues of that, being a normal kid, a normal teenager, and you're probably a normal teenager, you know, in every aspect of the word. You're an athlete, you're having fun with the guys. Your experiences have undoubtedly had an impact on your own personal mental health. What advice do you have for our listeners on maintaining mental wellness amidst all those inevitable up and downs that we can all fall into or have happened to us?
Yeah. Mental wellness is so critical in the human life. I find that many people actually neglect it a lot more than it should be. And the reason why I find it challenging is because it takes effort. And a lot of people are scared to take time away from being with the person 24/7 or doing things to occupy their time and space so that they don't have to think about everything. They're too tired and they just go to bed. And so for me, mental health has always been huge in who I am and also huge in my recovery. And so some of the things that I found are super great for my mental health are writing down three things I'm grateful for. That's one of the things, first thing in the morning or last thing at night, I write down three things I'm grateful for.
Gratitude journal. Yeah.
Yeah. If it gives you an attitude of gratitude.
Yeah,
and it does. With that, you're able to be fully connected and present in the moment. And I find that a lot of us too far distant or too far in the past. But when you have that gratitude, you're there, you're present. And so for me, that was one of the big things too. And doing one good deed a day, it sounds so simple, and it is. All you need to do is hold the door open for one person, because that you held the door open for that person, they're like, oh, that was really nice of that person. I'm going to hold the door for another person. Then you create a ripple effect. And so for me, that's one of the other things I love doing, because like I said, I help somebody else, it fills up me. And then another thing too is physical activity. Physical activity, getting 3 liters of water. So 30 minutes of physical activity every day and 3 liters of water. and sleeping for 7 to 8 hours a night. Those three things are going to change your life.
It's funny you say those. Yeah, I've discovered some of those just relatively recently. But what you say is exactly right. It's interesting to see the model. I get a lot of really great guests on the show, and they all say the same thing. So it's like the gratitude journal and being present. We had a coach, Jim Johnson, who was the coach of a basketball team in New York, and is kind of famous because he had a player who was autistic, J-Mac. He was like the team manager helping out with equipment and things. And in the last three, 4 minutes, you have to watch the go on ESPN and search out J-Mac's story, or you can watch our episode. It's in there and you can see the link to the video. But he puts in this kid who's autistic for the last 3 minutes, and his first shot down, and they feed him the ball and he throws and he misses it. Second one, like a big air ball, right? Second one, he misses that one. Third one, boom, he sinks it. In the next 3 minutes, he went on and got 20 points. And it's all on video. You see the crowd just going absolutely nuts. He got the most points in the game for the player just in 3 minutes. Yeah, he was just somebody he couldn't miss. And it's a great story. It's a very inspiring story. It's like Rudy, right? But for basketball. So these are all good stories. But he says the same things. And it's that attitude, and it's the leadership. And it's all of those things are combined, and people can get themselves out of funks. Like you say, exercise, good 30 minutes a day, attitude, get that attitude of gratitude. You can't be in a negative place when you're gratitude. It spirals up. It puts you into an upward spiral versus there's lots to get down about. We could all sit there and mope and get poor me, right? But well, don't know how long we have on the planet, but there's some great little tidbits. And those are gems. Those are things which do make a difference and protect our confidence. I think as human beings, the one thing we have is leaders, as coaches, as moms and dads, as partners, is to protect the confidence of those we love. So that your coach, your hockey coach, his job is to protect your confidence. Your job as you're working in your, I know you're working on your doctor of chiropractic, will be to protect the confidence of your patients or your clients and help them and do whatever. And just being a human being as you are. You wonder sometimes, is there a bigger universal picture that's looking after this? Because had that not happened, you know, had the accident not occurred, what would you be doing? Had that accident not occurred and you were still playing hockey, if you were to rewind that videotape and go there, would Caleb be where he is today, or would you be doing something different?
I feel like I'd be at a pretty similar spot. I'm not going to lie, because I would have been pursuing my career at York University. I got a scholarship before the crash had happened. And so I ended up going to York University after the accident and did my commerce degree there. And then my plan was to go play professional hockey overseas. And so since I wasn't able to get cleared for hockey, I wasn't able to go play professional overseas. However, after overseas professional hockey, I would have came back and done my doctor of chiropractic. So it wouldn't have been that much different of a story. I still would have ended up becoming a chiropractor. It might have been a little bit later on in life at that time. But for me, it's the way life goes too. And it's how you respond to those situations. You either turn something positive or something negative. And there's only really two options. You can't really stay in the middle. It's either you choose a positive path or a negative path. And so for me, I wanted to make the most of my situation. I don't think I would have wrote a book, because I wouldn't have had enough time for that, because I've been playing professional hockey. But I feel like I still have been doing speaking, just because at that time, like, I was doing speeches for the diabetic community already. And yeah. I was having offers across the country to speak on diabetes. So I feel like it would have morphed into more of a mental wellness or mental health, or even resilience. Maybe not resilience talk, but more of like a healthy lifestyle talk. But now I have the resilience aspect as well, and a lot more other aspects too.
Well, and you've always been authentically different, right? That's who Caleb is. And so speaking about that and creating authentic differentiation, your story's unique, you're unique, and it sets you apart from others and other speakers in many ways and other business owners. How do you believe individuals or entrepreneurs can create authentic differentiation in their personal or professional lives?
I feel like being true to you, being true to who you is what makes you unique. Everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses, and using those strengths to put it out there to be like, hey, this is my strengths. These are things that I can offer the world. That makes you a separate advantage, and that gives you something as well as to own it. I own that I'm a type 1 diabetic. I own that I have a brain injury. I own that I can't play professional hockey anymore because I'm not cleared for contact. I own these things. I accept them and I make it what I want to make out of it. I own my stories. And so I think that if you're unique, you own it. And that's what sets you apart, is you own who you are. You own your beauty. Everybody's beautiful in their own way. And I find that a lot of people try to be like somebody rather than being themselves, which ultimately would lead them to the most success, is being themselves.
Great advice. Great advice. Lots of gems there. So when we talk about success and failure in both life and business, success and failure are often closely intertwined, right? There's a small line between them. Can you share a moment of failure that maybe eventually led you to success or provided a valuable lesson? I mean, we had the accident, we had the diabetes, but can you think of any other examples where maybe you had some failures and that inspired you to go on and be successful?
For sure. There's quite a few failures I've had in my life, and I'm not perfect. So that's like a big thing. One story that I had really struggled with that I was able to turn into a positive and overcome was actually the period of when I had to go through York University and realize that I wasn't able to play. It was not easy for me because hockey has been my entire life. And I was doing all these tests and I was passing all these tests. And at the time, I felt like I could play. I was cleared and was good to go. Went to see the top neurologist in North America. I was actually located in Toronto, Dr. Charles Tatter, known throughout the whole sports world for CTE studies. And he went and looked at my scan and then looked at me, did all these assessments, pulled up my scan, said, "Look, you shouldn't be able to walk, talk, remember your name, but you look like a youth sports athlete. And you know what? I'm not going to clear you to play." And I found that was a part where I felt like, wow, I failed. It was an external circumstance. It was a part where I felt like I failed because I put in all the work I could. And then I was like, okay, I legit can't pursue my dream of playing professional hockey. I had opportunities after, even before I went to university, I had opportunities. So I was like, well, I crushed. I was like, one of my biggest goals and dreams was to play professional too. And so then I thought, okay, if I can't do that, how can I be a support to my team? Let's just cut everything back. If I can't be a hockey player, what else can I do? Will I still be a leader off the ice? I can still be involved in our team community. I can still be a leader to the teammates, the upcoming athletes, to helping them through schooling, help them get settled with living, moving to a new city. I can help the coach out with recruiting. I could help create packages. I could bring in people. I could do analytics. I could do so many different aspects. And that was when I branched out and truly became even more well-rounded. And I could have let that be a setback. I could have quit the team. I could have ended my time as a York Lion, but I decided to choose the other option of, you know what? Let's make the most of the situation. Let's find a way for me to still be a part of the team, to still be able to help out in the organization and give back to the hockey world.
And that, again, it's always a choice, isn't it? So you didn't cause your circumstances. In some cases, you can't cure it, but you can definitely make new choices. And so you can make those choices. So no, great story. So last question for you. Looking ahead, as you look into the future, Caleb, what are some of your goals or aspirations? And how do you plan on continually making an impact and inspiring others?
I have lots of goals and aspirations for the future. And I'm super excited about it too. I find that the past has helped shape me to be who I am today. And all the crossroads have led me to where I'm at. In the future, my goals include continuing speaking across North America and even in Europe. I've been fortunate enough to do that already and would love to continue doing that as well. Talking about leadership, resilience, honest community. There's lots of different topics that I like to speak about. On top of that, I can't wait to be a chiropractor and I want to be a chiropractic neurologist. So I specialize in harder conditions that deal with the brain and helping those people who are dealing with more of the difficult situations, help find them a happier and healthier lifestyle. And on top of that too, I'd love to have my own practice eventually. My girlfriend and I are right now in the plans of going to Dominican Republic and volunteering in a third country there with World Spine Care to give back for 3 months. We're super excited about that. And lastly, I just would love to have a happy family. I find that like some bigger things are amazing, but also just like some simple things. Having a happy family, being a dad, coaching, helping out, being a great husband, great father. Those are things that I have huge goals and aspirations for. And that really fills up my cup too. And continuing Dahlgren's Diabetes, continue to give back to the diabetic community. There's lots of things that I want to do and continue. And I'm fortunate enough to have found things that have filled up my cups and continue to fill up my cups in the future.
No, that's awesome. Good story. Good, inspiring story. Caleb, this was a real pleasure having you. Thanks for sharing your story. The book is called Crossroads, published by HarperCollins, available wherever you get your books. And we'll have all your information in the show notes. So companies, organizations that are looking for someone who's got an inspiring story and just a delight as a human being. It's hard to not look back because I've met many professional athletes my day and guys who are retired now who played in the show, so to speak. And some of them have issues, they have problems, they have economic problems. Their heyday was their heyday. Their best years were behind them. You know, in the time they're in their mid 30s, they have a hard time looking ahead, where I think you're just getting started. So I think you've got a bright, bright future and you got a great story and you got a great attitude. And we can all learn from the lessons that you teach in your book and from your speaking. Hey, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for the kind words and thanks for having me on here. I appreciate all that you do in the community and thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. All right. Good talking to you.
Thanks. You too.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.